the jeans I'd been wearing since I arrived. There were flecks of dried blood on my shoulders from all that had soaked into my hair 2 nights before. I needed to wash my hair and brush my teeth. But did they even have toothpaste and running water at Eclipse? I scanned the room and saw no outlets. Clearly, electricity was not a priority for the Calyptra. Whoever was outside my door playing the guitar must have heard the floorboards creak under my feet, because the music stopped and there was a tentative tap on the wood.
Kenna, are you awake?
There was a man's voice with a slight Johnny Cash twang. I pressed my ear to the crack between the door and the jamb. Who's there? I asked.
Cyrus. We didn't officially meet yet.
Cyrus, the guy from the gate. The guy who made the back of my neck go hot when he looked at me.
Just a sec,
I said, my voice thin and hoarse from my narrowed airways. There was a pitcher of water and a bowl on a little table by the window. I hurriedly rinsed out my mouth, and then noticed a rustic-looking toothbrush and a jar of what looked like jelly. I opened the jar, sniffed it. It smelled like mint, so I dabbed my finger into it and tasted it. Decided it was some kind of DIY toothpaste, and quickly brushed with it, hoping I hadn't guessed wrong, that I hadn't just washed my mouth out with lotion or shampoo. There was no mirror in the room, so I ran my hands over my hair and clothes to try to make myself at least semi-presentable, and called it good enough. When I opened the door, I found Cyrus leaning against the wall, cleaning his fingernails with a pocket knife. His guitar was propped against the wall next to him. He looked, if possible, even more beautiful than he had when I'd seen him the previous day, his shaggy mane all dark chocolate coils like he was Jim Morrison's hair twin, his eyes a stunning shade of jewel blue against his graham cracker tanned skin. He must have been too busy to remember the top few buttons on his shirt, because it was open to the defined squares of his pectoral muscles. Looking at him made it even harder to breathe.
Morning,
he said, closing his knife and pocketing it in jeans that looked to have been worn as soft as an old t-shirt. He smiled a charming half-smile and gave a little bow, one hand placed on his stomach, the other behind his back.
I'm Cyrus.
I know, I said, wary. Where's Rebecca? I couldn't bring myself to call her grandmother or grandma or Nana, or any of the things you were supposed to call a grandma. She looked too young for those labels. But remembering how much younger my mom had looked after I did whatever I did to bring her back from death, I couldn't believe Rebecca was actually the age she appeared to be, which probably meant that none of the other Calyptra were either.
Asleep, Cyrus told me. She had a long night and needed to get some rest. She asked me to keep an eye on you today, show you around and introduce you to some of the folks since you'll be staying here a while.
He must have seen my face change at the reminder of my sojourn sans expiration date, because he added quickly,
We're good people. Everyone's real excited to meet Rebecca's long-lost kin.
One of them, I corrected. I have a twin sister. At the thought of Aaron, my breathing constricted again. I tried to take a deep breath to calm myself, but the air seemed to hit a wall inside my throat. Cyrus's dark eyebrows scrunched together in concern.
Are you all right? You look like you might pass out or something. Rebecca won't be too happy if you keel over on my watch.
I shook my head, determined to relax and control my breathing. It's all in your head, I told myself, because that's what every asthma doctor who'd ever examined me claimed, despite evidence to the contrary. But it was true that the only triggers to my asthma seemed to be anxiety and panic, and I hadn't actually showed any symptoms until after Jason Dunn's death. I took a breath through my nose and let it out slowly. My lungs eased a little, but only a little. I'm fine, I told Cyrus, and then chewed the inside of my cheek in hesitation. But I was wondering. I think I would be more fine if...
I know what you're going to ask, he said, interrupting.
You do?
Of course. We've all experienced what you're going through on one level or another.
He winked at me and crooked his arm, gesturing for me to follow him. I did. Cyrus led me across the sweeping belt of field that surrounded Eclipse House, where wildflowers speckled the long grasses with tiny starbursts of color, patches of vermilion, tangerine, lavender, and lemon. We passed the old A-frame barn and a grove of trees where a colorful webbing of hammocks connected the trunks, a brightly painted wooden wagon that would have looked at home in a Romani caravan, and a yurt, the panels cinched up to reveal an interior filled with lounging sofas, floor pillows, and a number of acoustic guitars propped on stands. Any other day I would have made a beeline for those instruments, the way some people were with babies or puppies, needing to hold them, paw at them, fawn over them. I was with guitars. Today, a more pressing need had replaced my usual compulsion, but even my craving for anima couldn't entirely overshadow the bohemian idyll of Eclipse. You know, I thought Eclipse was like some backwoods cult compound, I said to Cyrus. But it's more like... I trailed off, partly because I was out of breath, and partly because the word in my head seemed, for some reason, dangerous. Paradise, I thought. It's like paradise.
You sure wind easily, Cyrus commented when I didn't finish, taking note of the whistling rattle in my throat. My airways had begun to feel like they were wrapped tight with rubber bands.
I have asthma, I said.
Asthma, he repeated, as though I'd spoken a word in another language.
You've never heard of asthma?
It sounds familiar.
It's a medical condition. Tens of millions of people around the world have it.
He shrugged, unconcerned in a way that irritated me.
Not here they don't.
Good for you guys.
I sighed and decided to admit the truth, both to myself and to him.
The thing is, I forgot my inhaler, my asthma medication, and I'm going to need it soon, or I could be in trouble. Maybe someone could take me home just to grab some of my things.
He smiled but shook his head.
I don't know what an inhaler is, but I'm pretty sure we can do better than that.
He waited for me to start walking again, which I did after a petulant pause.
Tell me about yourself,
Cyrus said, making me feel like we were on a blind date. Not that I'd ever been on a blind date. For some reason, the thought of Cyrus and me on a date, even though we weren't, made flames bloom inside my cheeks. I had to turn my face away so he wouldn't notice and ask why I'd gone from pale to pink.
Not really in a chatty mood, I said.
It'll help get your mind off the catharsis symptoms, he urged. What do you like to do? Do you have a job or go to school or something? Do you have a boyfriend? Who are you?
Who was I? That was not a question I could answer truthfully. I was the girl who murdered a kid at the ripe old age of 10. I was the girl who almost did the same thing to her twin sister after bringing her back from the dead. I was the girl who was so out of control and dangerous her mom dumped her at a hippie commune and left without a goodbye.
I'm a music snob, I told him instead.
Oh, yeah?
He raised a dark stripe of eyebrow at me, seeming intrigued.
What else?
I'm a songwriter and I play the guitar. It's probably the only thing I'm actually good at. This fall I start senior year, but I hate school, and I don't want to go to college. I want to be a musician. And I'm not sure about the boyfriend part. I might have one. We haven't really figured that out yet.
I wasn't sure why I decided to tell him any of these things. Once I started, the information poured out. Even though he was a stranger, I felt oddly comfortable around Cyrus. Maybe it was the southern accent, slight though it was. Southern accents just made the people who had them seem like they could be trusted. And there was something about Cyrus's face, too. The more I looked at it, the more I saw. He wasn't quite as perfect as he'd seemed on first sight. His nose and chin were both slightly crooked, as though they'd been broken at some point. But the asymmetry only added interest and dimension to a face that would have been blandly flawless without it. My mom had claimed that true beauty was in the imperfections, but I'd always wondered if she only told us this because Aaron and I were so very imperfect.
Your turn, I said.
Who are you? What do you do? Do you have a girlfriend? Sure, he said, grinning his crooked grin. Lots of them.
Cyrus halted at a wooden fence, an enclosure several acres wide and long, containing a flock of sheep and a herd of goats, and a dozen horses. He leaned his elbows on the fence and pointed.
See that little one there?
he said, pointing to a shaggy, half-sized goat with brown and white fur.
He's our resident troublemaker. He keeps finding a way to jump the fence, then gets into the gardens and eats as much as he can before we catch him.
I watched the goat race through an obstacle course of his young friends, knocking one of them over and bounding over the top of another like it was a hurdle. What's his name? I asked, smiling and chuckling a raspy laugh. Cyrus snorted in derision, and then realized I was serious.
Oh, we don't name the animals.
Why not? I asked, and then decided it was a stupid question. This was a farm, and these animals were livestock, not pets. Did people eat goat? I was pretty sure they did, and the idea of anyone slaughtering this little goat was unthinkable to me.
I'm going to call him Bully, I said decisively.
Bully the Kid. Baby goats are called kids, right? Cyrus frowned at me, ignoring my question.
That's not a good idea.
Too late, it's already done, I called to the goat. I hereby dub you Bully the Kid. Maybe Bully's name would stick and the Calyptra would start to think of him as a pet instead of just an animal. You couldn't eat a pet. I watched Bully race across the enclosure and then spring into the air for the sheer joy of it, releasing a bleat of triumph when he hit the ground. I'd never envied a goat before, but at that moment I really, really wanted to be Bully, to feel what he was feeling. Even a few seconds of simple happiness would suffice. I was comfortable existing in a mild state of malaise, and I'd always accepted that I was who I was. My melancholia was like the vines that wrapped some decrepit structures, holding them up, fortifying them. Besides, I figured, not everyone had to be happy-go-lucky. The world needed miserable artists, too. But after what I'd seen in the basement, my family slaughtered, their blood, their death, I wasn't sure I wanted the darkness anymore. I wanted to tear off the vines that used to keep me from falling apart, to find some other way to exist, even if it meant becoming a whole new person. Tomorrow you start over, Rebecca had said to me last night, like I didn't have a choice. Like that was just how it had to be, and I was both surprised and relieved to realize I was okay with that. I didn't want to be me anymore. I hadn't for a long time, but now that I was at Eclipse, separate from everything that made me me, my mom, my twin, my guitar, even Blake, I wondered if I could cast off the person I used to be and truly start fresh, like Rebecca said. The people here didn't know anything about me. I could be someone else to them, someone better than who I'd been for the last 7 years, for the last 17 for that matter. I knelt and held out my hand to Bully the Kid, trying to get him to come to me. He started toward me.
Best not touch him just yet, Cyrus warned. You're still a bit raw. Wouldn't want you to cull him now that you've named him.
I withdrew my hand quickly, and Bully gave me an offended look and a frustrated bray, which sounded almost identical to a baby crying, before darting off to play with his friends again. I straightened and turned to Cyrus, my lungs tighter than ever as anxiety swelled in me. Is it always going to be this way? I asked, terrified at the answer. Cyrus turned his back on the animals and leaned his elbows on the fence, his posture relaxed and casual. All he needed was a wheat straw sticking out of his mouth.
Nah, he said, seemingly unaware of my angst. You learn to control it. The catharsis only comes after you cull too much anima.
Cull? The word sounded so much like kill, I wondered if I'd misheard him.
Right. Culling is what we call it when we harvest anima from another living thing. Catharsis is what happens if you escalate the amount of anima you cull too quickly, and your body can't handle it. But we'll get you sorted in time. Don't worry.
But how? I asked. How do I control the need? The need for more. Always more. As though sensing my agitation, Bully raced toward me, braying a sound like insane laughter. This time I couldn't manage a smile, and he stopped at the fence, gazed at me with his black eyes, and then turned and raced away again. I sighed. Cyrus tilted his head to consider me, eyes squinted against the sun.
How much do you know about what you are?
Let's see. Pretty much nothing.
So you're a clean slate, huh?
I laughed humorlessly.
Yep, squeaky clean. That's me.
My laughter died, and I turned to him. Tell me everything. His eyes slid from mine.
I can't. Rebecca, she said she wants to be the one to tell you, but not until the time is right.
When will that be? He shrugged, still avoiding my eyes.
You may be able to do what we can do, Kenna, but you're not one of us yet. You can't expect us to tell you the secrets we've kept from the world, and then release you back to that same world.
You don't trust me, I said, shoulders sagging.
We don't know you as all.
I heaved another sigh. Can't you tell me anything? Are there other people out in the world like me? I asked. Like us?
It's possible, but if there are, they aren't from Eclipse. Your mom is the only person who ever left.
Do you know why she left? He scratched his neck beneath his hair.
She wanted to be a part of the world. Eclipse wasn't big enough for her, I guess.
The world? I said, thinking that didn't sound like my mom. It wasn't as if she'd run off to Los Angeles to become an actress. She'd bought a house tucked in the woods, as far from town proper as she could get. Is that what you call... I made a sweeping gesture. Everything that's not here? He nodded, coils of dark hair dangling in his eyes.
This valley is our world. Staying separate is the whole point. If regular people knew what we could do, can you imagine what would happen to us?
I pictured glass prison cells, experiments, people in white coats carrying syringes and clipboards. I shuddered.
But it's more than that, Cyrus said. I've lived in the regular world, and it just feels wrong, unnatural. Everything is artificial, the light, the music, the food. Your air is poison. You said it yourself. Millions of people have this asthma now, including you. Your words have lost their meaning because you all talk too much, so you can't even understand each other. When you look at the sky at night, you're missing most of the stars. You live in an endless march of technology, a relentless forward momentum of progress. But here at Eclipse, our air is clean, our food is pure, our needs are simple.
His voice seemed to go a little flat as he added,
"We're happy."
I considered what he was saying and nodded in understanding. I often felt like I'd been born in the wrong generation, that I would have fit more comfortably in the 60s or 70s, before the internet and smartphones and gaming systems and tablets turned everyone into cyborgs waiting to happen. Maybe because I'd never really belonged, I found myself in the role of constant observer. I watched, removed, as the people I went to school with texted more than they spoke, learned to code faster than they learned how to write with their own hands, turned away from their physical reality for one that didn't actually exist, an intangible world of zeros and ones. There was a payphone outside a gas station in Rushing, a relic from another age, and once when Blake had stopped there for gas, I watched as a girl I knew from school tried in vain to figure out how it worked, before finally knocking on my window and asking if she could use my cell because she lost hers. It made me sad, because at first I'd scoffed at her, and then realized I probably didn't know how to use the payphone either, and if I did, I didn't have a single phone number memorized to call anyone. A sudden tremor racked my body, and I felt that internal pinch again, as if each of my organs had simultaneously experienced some kind of vicious spasm. The shuddering sound in my ears, like palpitating wings, ramped up to a low roar. Cyrus, watching my expression, seemed to recognize instantly what was happening. He smacked his forehead with the heel of his hand.
What am I thinking? Keeping you waiting while I ramble on. Come on, let's get you some anima.
I looked around. Where are we going to get it? I was thinking of the sheep's head jar containing that white cloud of anima, and all I saw out here were actual sheep. Dread pierced my heart like a cold needle, until Cyrus held out his arms and turned in a circle, as though to encompass all we could see.
Anywhere, he said. Anything living is yours to take.
I don't want to cull any animals, I blurted, shaking my head rapidly. I won't do that, ever.
You don't have to, he said, a sly smile on his face.
He He bent and picked a wildflower with a crown of plum-colored petals.
Here.
He held the flower out to me. I took it and raised my eyes to Cyrus. What am I supposed to do with this?
Call its anima.
But it's just a flower.
I'm not saying it's going to tide you over forever, but it'll be enough. Trust me.
He smiled, and I did. I trusted him. Then, before I knew what was happening, I felt that unraveling sensation. Pale veins as thin as thread emerged from my fingers and connected to the wildflower. Its energy, its anima, entered me like a deep breath of clean air after being held underwater. The anima infused and swam through me, chasing away the catharsis symptoms like dust scattered by a broom, before settling in my brain, enhancing my senses. Every color became more vibrant. Secret hues and shades that I'd never known existed bloomed in the sky, a variegated wash of blues and violets and blushes and sun streaks. The smell of the flowers and the earth and even the animals nearby was intoxicating. The sun and breeze on my skin made me sigh contentedly, and the air that entered my lungs tasted like powdered sugar and summer nostalgia. I breathed deep, deeper, deeper. My lungs had relaxed, and my airways were more open than they'd ever been.
Better? Cyrus asked.
Grinning, I nodded dizzily.
Well, all right then, he said. Time to meet the others.
Calyptra. When we reached the dining room, I was still enjoying the wildflower anima floating through my veins and bathing my brain, making everything soft and hazy, and at the same time vibrant and alive, and more in some fundamental way, like a layer of dullness had been stripped from the world, revealing the beauty beneath. I thought of those camera phone filters that turn the crappiest of photos into works of art. This was like that, only 1,000 times better, and encompassing every dimension of my being. Sight, touch, hearing, smell. Oh, lordy, the scents in the air. The layers and complexity to every inhalation. Inside Eclipse House, the smell of cooking food was so intense and heavenly I almost started to drool. I caught the scent of sugar and mint, baking bread and warm jam, butter and cream and tea, strawberries and peaches. My olfactory senses separated each smell and appreciated it individually, before combining them in a mouth-watering medley. I wondered if this was what it was like to be a dog. We entered the kitchen, and Stieg, covered in flour up to his elbows, saluted us from the massive butcher's block, shouted an enthusiastic, "Good morgen!" and then returned to kneading a mass of bread dough. Joanna worked alongside him, cracking brown eggs into a bowl with precise flicks of her wrist. But when she saw me, she hit the edge of the bowl too hard, and the egg exploded in her hand. She scowled in my direction as she snatched up a towel and wiped away the egg yolk dripping from her fingers. Beneath the sensory euphoria I was experiencing, I was dimly aware of a twinge of disquiet. Many of the Calyptra seemed wary of my presence, but Joanna was downright hostile. What had I done to make her hate me so much? The kitchen and dining hall were filled with people. When Cyrus and I entered, everyone stopped what they were doing and stared at me in silence. I shrank under the weight of so many eyes, but a girl with a waist-length volcanic eruption of lava-colored hair cut through the crowd toward us. She veered past me and planted a wet kiss on Cyrus's cheek with her cushiony lips. "Where have you been all morning?" she asked, batting tawny eyelashes at him. She had curves that would have put a Victoria's Secret model to shame, and she flaunted them unabashedly in a low-cut dress with bell sleeves that looked to have been pieced together from several hundred scraps of mismatched fabric. Somehow the look worked on her, but I could never have pulled off so much color, so many different patterns and textures. I was a one-note kind of girl. Cyrus jerked his head at me.
Rebecca asked me to keep an eye on our guest.
I bet you enjoyed that. The girl narrowed her eyes first at Cyrus, then turned to me with her hands on her hips. She's pretty. Scrawny, but pretty. We need to put some meat on your bones, Kenna. You're wasting away. Even through the anima haze, I was coherent enough to be embarrassed at having my body assessed by someone who could have filled out Scarlett Johansson's dresses. My cheeks burned so hot they probably matched the girl's cinnamon hair.
Cut it out, Ilya, Cyrus said, a note of hostility in his normally cavalier voice. You're making her uncomfortable.
Was I that obvious? It's okay, I said. I didn't want to cause any trouble while I was here. The Calyptra weren't used to visitors invading their space, and I wanted to be as inconspicuous as a shy ghost if I could manage it. Ilya was suddenly flustered. I'm so sorry, she said to me. Cyrus will tell you I say whatever it is I'm thinking, even if I should keep my mouth shut. Everyone here is used to me, but well, it's been a long time since we had company. It's been never, Joanna put in snidely. She had finished cracking eggs, and now she leaned against the kitchen island with her arms folded, glaring at Ilya with those small oil drop eyes. They were like snake's eyes, I realized, black and beady and dangerous. Ilya ignored her. Welcome to Eclipse, granddaughter of Rebecca, she said, and then hugged me so tight I heard my ribs creak. But with the wildflower anima enhancing my senses, it felt good to have her body pressed so tight against mine. I found myself hugging her back, relishing the warmth radiating from her skin. Her smell, honey and ginger and lemons, filled my head like a fog. After 7 years of keeping people at a distance, I realized how much I'd missed human touch. And this was human touch to the 100th power. Don't worry, she said softly into my ear. We accept you. I almost melted into a puddle on the floor. I didn't know these were the words I'd been waiting to hear, that I had needed to hear for so long. My mom had told me to hide what I was, and so I did, but every day had been a struggle, a white-knuckle grip of self-control. I was exhausted by restraint. I felt stretched thin enough to rip apart. Or I had. Now I felt full and buzzing and relaxed all at the same time. I felt alive and I felt free. Ilya untangled herself from my arms and held me back. I could tell by the sympathetic smile on her face that she had understood what was going on in my head. Since Rebecca isn't here yet, I'll make the introductions, Ilya said, sliding her hand down to mine and squeezing it, which caused a rush of tingling pleasure to swim up my arm. Her touch felt so good I had to fight not to swoon. I wondered dreamily if this was merely the effect of the wildflower anima, or if maybe I had a thing for girls and never realized it until Ilya pressed her chest to mine. I knew people around town speculated that my mom was a lesbian. She was beautiful in a scrubbed, unadorned sort of way, and men asked her out all the time, but she always said no. The previous summer, I'd worked part-time in Mom's bakery after she had to fire an employee and didn't have time to hire someone else. I would have liked to work there more, but one of us had to be home with Aaron to keep an eye on her, and since Mom had to make a living, that responsibility fell to me. But during that summer at the bakery, I'd witnessed firsthand the way men looked at my mom and the polite disinterest she showed toward them. It was like she didn't see them, even the good-looking ones, like they all had the same face and she didn't need to look at it to know them. Why don't you date? I had asked her at the end of my first day working in the bakery, during which I'd seen her hit on by 3 different men. Her answer was a shrug and an unsatisfying, I just don't. Well, don't you think our lives might be easier if we had a dad? She had sighed an extraordinarily long sigh. In some ways, maybe. But then we'd have to let someone new into our lives. Someone who would want to know everything about us. I don't know if either of us wants that. She was right. I never bothered her about dating again. There were too many names and faces for me to remember when presented with them all at once, but some of the Calyptra were unforgettable. There was soft-spoken Hitomi with her milk-pale porcelain skin, who stood out from the rest of the sun-browned Calyptra. In a sweet, girlish voice, she thanked me for coming, as though I'd been invited to tea, and then kissed me on both cheeks before introducing me to Rory, a tomboy with a smoky voice and a thick collection of dreadlocks that hung to her waist with little bells and stones and bits of feather woven into them. There was Sunday, who sported the most glorious thunderhead of an afro I'd ever seen, and whose laugh was so loud and raucous it infected everyone who heard it. Ilya referred to her as the artist. Of course there is no shortage of artists at Eclipse, Elias said. But everyone knows Sunday is the real prodigy among us. She did the paintings in the hallways, and all of our tattoos. Elias slipped her dress off one shoulder to reveal a small piece of a much larger tattoo of a moth wing. You did my mom's too? I asked Sunday. She nodded but didn't elaborate, and I got the impression the Calyptra may have been instructed not to talk about my mom. Nearly everyone told me I was the spitting image of Rebecca. No one mentioned my mom. I wondered how much power Rebecca wielded over them. She definitely seemed like she was the one in charge, with her imperious tone and her expansive room with the balcony that looked out over the valley. I was greeted next by Diego and Yuri, who argued loudly in Portuguese when speaking to each other, but lost their accents completely when talking to anyone else. Though dressed in jeans and cowboy boots, Diego, the older brother, had a dignified elegance about him, like he'd enjoyed a privileged life. He was the only male among the Calyptra with his hair cut short. He bowed over my hand and kissed it.
Eclipse welcomes you, Bella.
Yuri, his hair a mop and his mouth in a perpetually wry smile, possessed none of his older brother's sophistication. He elbowed Diego aside, and as though in competition gave an even more enthusiastic, but mocking, bow as he said,
It is an absolute pleasure to meet you, Kenna. If you ever need anything, anything at all, I am your man.
Ilya hooked an arm around my waist and whispered in my ear. Don't be fooled by those two. They may flirt with you, but, well, let's just say you don't possess the equipment to play their game. You mean they're gay? She blinked at me, taken off guard, and then gave me a distrustful look. Is that a problem for you? No, why would it be? Ilya put a hand to her forehead as though she'd experienced a wave of dizziness. Things must have changed quite a bit since my day. I wanted to ask her what that day might have been, but that seemed rude, like asking a woman's age. Ilya looked 20, but in her eyes she appeared much older than that. She shook her head and waved at the air with one hand. Regardless, there are plenty of other men here for you to choose from. Oh, no, I have a boyfriend back home. Sort of. Well, we live by a different set of rules when it comes to fidelity, and while you're here, you're one of us. She glanced at Cyrus. Truthfully, if you're going to have a dalliance with anyone at Eclipse, it should be Cyrus. She reached up, took a lock of my hair and a lock of hers, and began to braid them loosely together. He's a very good kisser. I darted a look at Cyrus, who caught my eye and smiled questioningly, as though to ask, Are you okay? Without losing a beat, Ilya went on with the introductions, but I was so rattled I didn't remember a single name after that. The Calyptra must have been instructed by Rebecca to welcome me with open arms, whereas when I'd first arrived I'd been treated with outright suspicion. Now, with the exception of Joanna, they behaved as though I was their long-lost sister. They hugged and kissed and fawned over me, but as the effects of the wildflower anima in me dwindled, their affection began to make me uncomfortable. I missed the intensity of my enhanced senses. I started to tense as I felt the pull of anima swirling inside each person who touched me, the craving to sip at it like a mosquito sucking blood. I wanted to go outside to cull another flower, but I wasn't sure how to ask to be excused without offending anyone, and I didn't want to seem like some kind of anima junkie, so I tamped down my craving and forced a smile. Rebecca was the last to enter the dining hall. By that time, everyone was seated and waiting for her, and a feast lay steaming on the table. Eggs flavored with recently picked herbs, topped with blistered tomatoes and mushrooms sautéed in butter. Fresh goat cheese and jugs of velvety milk. Baskets of apple and berry muffins. Crunchy bread full of seeds and nuts, with butter so rich and sweet it was almost like whipped cream. Berries drizzled with honey and sprinkled with mint. And several pots of tea that tasted like vanilla and lemon and almonds. Rebecca made her appearance just as I was about to crack and start digging into the food with my bare hands. I hadn't eaten since the stale hospital Danish I'd picked at during my interview with Detective Speakman. I'd been so distracted by hunger for anima over the past 24 hours that I'd forgotten all about food. My grandmother wore a long white dress, just transparent enough to show her lithe, long-limbed figure. Her hair was spooled on top of her head in a messy bun. She flicked a hand at us.
Eat, please. What are you waiting for?
She poured herself a cup of tea while the rest of us filled our plates. Rebecca ate sparingly, her knees up under her, revealing bare feet and ringed toes. She sipped her tea, gazing at me as though she were casually observing a new animal that had been introduced to an established family in a cage at the zoo, wondering how I'd get along with the natives. But she didn't speak to me, or anyone for that matter. She merely watched us. I got the impression there were things she wanted to say to me, but not in front of the rest of the Calyptra.
Kenna, will you join our circle at the fire tonight? Ilya asked, spreading herbed butter on a thick slice of seed bread.
Your circle?
Most nights we play music around the fire, Stieg explained. Did your mother teach you to...
His words cut off, and he glanced at Rebecca, with an expression that reminded me of a dog afraid it had incurred the wrath of a strict master. I looked from Stieg to Rebecca.
I don't know, I said, ignoring the aborted question so as not to get Stieg into trouble.
I don't have my guitar. Stieg waved his hand at that.
If there is one thing we have plenty of at Eclipse, it's guitars, Stieg said. I should know. I made most of them.
He pushed his chest out proudly when he saw my eyes pop with wonder. It was like he just told me he was responsible for erecting Stonehenge.
You make guitars? Will you show me how?
Stieg grinned.
Of course.
Do you write music, Kenna? Rebecca asked.
I looked over to find my grandmother staring at me intently. I nodded. I don't know if I'm any good, I said, which wasn't exactly true. I knew I was good. I just didn't know what these people considered good.
Your mother used to write songs, Rebecca said, sounding far away, lost in memory.
She sipped at her tea.
We don't sing them anymore, but they were lovely. Sad, but lovely.
This news was nearly as much of a shock to me as it had been to discover I had a grandmother I never knew about. My mom had never told me she wrote music. She had never even alluded to the fact. There was so much she could have taught me, about music, about myself, but instead she had hoarded secrets and asked me to do the same. But I remembered when I was very young, there was a song she used to sing to Aaron and me to get us to go to sleep, a sort of lullaby. Sweet girl, don't cry. Sweet girl, I hear you sigh. I'll never let you go. But you must still dream alone. Sweet girl, don't cry. Sweet girl, I hear you sigh. I'll be here when you wake, so you won't be afraid to dream alone. To dream alone. I'd thought it was a tune all parents knew and sang to their children, but now I wasn't so sure. Maybe that lullaby had been one of hers. It was certainly sad and lovely, as Rebecca said my mom's songs were. I wished she had told me who she was or who she had been. I'd always known my mom was aloof, but I was coming to understand that it was more than that. She was a complete stranger. I feel like I don't even know you. That was what I had said to her in the car, but I had immediately regretted my words. Now I was glad I had said them, gratified that she knew how I felt before she abandoned me. I'll never let you go, my ass.
Maybe you could teach us some of your songs, Rebecca suggested.
I bit my lower lip, not sure I was ready to share my music again so soon. My performance at Folk Yeah Fest seemed like it had happened to someone else.
Then it's settled.
Ilya clapped her hands excitedly.
You'll come to the fire tonight, and we'll learn some of your songs.
When breakfast was finished, most of the Calyptra departed to work in the fields and orchards and gardens, while a few stayed to clean up after the meal. I started to help clear the dishes, though I was desperate to get outside again and sample more anima. But Rebecca had other ideas.
Kenna, come to my study, she said, her tone leaving no room for argument. I need to speak with you.
Did I do something wrong? I asked when we were alone in Rebecca's room. Maybe it was my perpetually guilty conscience doing my thinking for me, but it seemed like I had displeased Rebecca. Instead of answering my question, she said,
Have a seat,
indicating an arrangement of large pillows, arcing in front of the fireplace. I lowered myself awkwardly onto one of the pillows and folded my legs, biting my lip to keep myself from rushing to apologize, when I still didn't know how I had offended, or even if I had. Rebecca took the pillow across from mine, lounging comfortably. After a pregnant silence that would have driven Blake crazy, Rebecca finally spoke. "How do you feel today?" "Fine," I said. She smiled the kind of knowing smile that told me she could see right through me to the back of my brain, into the dark cellar where I stored my most appalling secrets. "Be honest." I took a breath and sighed. Lying to Rebecca wasn't going to get me anywhere. She was too perceptive. "When I woke up this morning, the withdrawal symptoms, or whatever you call them, were back," I told Rebecca. "Catharsis," she corrected, and nodded for me to continue. "They weren't as bad as they were yesterday, but I knew they would get worse," I said. Cyrus had me take Anima out in the field, and after that I felt great again, but once it wore off, the hunger returned. I nodded, averting my eyes in shame. "I don't know how to control it."
"You can't."
I blinked at her, wondering if I'd heard her wrong. "But isn't that why I'm here? To learn how to control it?"
"That's what your mother would like," Rebecca said. "But the real reason you're here is because you can't cull another Calyptra. You're here because your mom doesn't want you to hurt her or your sister or anyone else. She understands how thorny your situation has become. It is one thing to experience catharsis after culling too much anima in too many forms as you did. It is another to undergo catharsis after culling the most potent form of anima, which you also did." I raised my eyebrows in question. "Human anima," she clarified. I swallowed hard. So my mom had told her what happened in the basement. Had she also told her about Jason Dunn? Rebecca leveled her green eyes on me, her gaze intent and penetrating. I felt like she was peeling back layers of me using only her stare. "Have you taken human anima?" I asked, looking down, unable to maintain eye contact any longer.
"Yes,"
Rebecca said without hesitation, and I was surprised to hear no trace of guilt in her voice, and equally surprised that I was relieved at her lack of obvious culpability. She didn't explain the circumstances that led to her taking human anima, and although I was desperate to know what had happened, I didn't ask. I had never spoken of what I did to Jason Dunn, and I guessed Rebecca would prefer not to talk about her experience either.
"Unfortunately, the very nature of anima is addictive," Rebecca said. "And the more potent the sources of it that you take, the more your cravings will escalate. The amount of anima in a non-sentient thing like a plant is minimal and wears off quickly. The amount in an insect or spider is slightly more potent, and in a creature like a reptile or bird or mammal, more efficacious still, because those sorts of anima bring with them a trace of the vessel."
I shook my head, not sure I understood.
"The vessel?" "The container. In some cases, a body. But there are other things that can hold anima, if one knows how to capture it."
I glanced toward the cupboard from which Cyrus had taken the sheep's head jar. Rebecca saw where my eyes went and nodded.
"We call them culling jars," she said. "We use them to store anima."
I pictured the rows and rows of jars I'd glimpsed inside that cupboard, and I couldn't suppress a shudder of desire. I unconsciously licked my lips like a dog salivating at the sight of meat.
"What kind of anima?" I asked, hoping Rebecca couldn't detect the grasping neediness in my voice.
Rebecca cocked her head to study me a moment before answering.
"Mostly animal," she said.
I swallowed hard, thinking of Jason Dunn killing Aaron's cat, Clint Eastwood, and its entire litter. Then I thought of the animals that had perished in the circle of death surrounding my house, the chaotic fur of sensations and impulses that had poured into me and flowed through me into the bodies of my mom and Aaron. That had saved their lives. Lastly, I thought of Bully, the rambunctious little goat I'd named earlier that morning.
"You kill the animals to take their anima?" I asked, horrified, and beneath that horror, desirous in a way I could not ignore or suppress.
Cull, Rebecca corrected. We don't kill, we cull. We harvest. There is a difference.
But if the animal dies...
Kenna!
She spoke my name sharply, a reprimand, and I shut my mouth. The way my grandmother shifted from serene to commanding was going to take some getting used to.
Do you eat meat? She asked.
I shrugged. Sure.
So do we, Rebecca said.
The animals at Eclipse live good, happy lives, and when we need their meat, we slaughter them humanely, and we preserve their anima in one of the culling jars, so we can ration it over time and share it among the entire commune. The animal feeds our bodies, and the anima, well, it feeds everything else.
Do you know what the word calyptra means?
I shook my head.
A calyptra is a veil. We call ourselves this because we know of the existence of a veil that obscures the divine world all around us. And we know how to lift that veil and see beyond it. Anima is how, Kenna. Anima heals our bodies and keeps us young. But more importantly, it connects us to nature and expands our minds and our experience of the world in a way no one who is not Calyptra can ever understand.
Like a drug, I said.
It is simple energy, but yes, the experience can provide a dreamlike experience and enhance your senses, similar to certain drugs. And, as I said, the ability to cull anima comes with the potential to become addicted if you take too much, or if you take anima that is too powerful for your mind and body to manage.
What kind of anima did I take yesterday? I asked, thinking of the tranquility that washed over me, so heavy that it had carried me straight to sleep.
It was lamb, wasn't it? I guessed before she could answer, remembering the shape of the jar.
Rebecca nodded.
We craft the jars accordingly.
But how? I asked.
How do you get anima into the jars? And why are they able to contain it? It seems like the anima would just leak out.
She waved one long-fingered hand in a dismissive gesture.
It's not something I can explain. You have to experience the process for yourself in order to learn. I was taught by a bruja in Mexico how to make the jars.
She smiled.
Perhaps someday I will teach you, too.
She sat up and crossed her arms on top of her knees.
As to how we transfer anima from one vessel to another, I believe you already know something about that.
I looked down at my hands, picturing those strange white threads that emerged from them when I took anima.
I guess so. You have nothing to be ashamed of, Kenna. What we are is something to be celebrated, not repressed or despised. Never be ashamed of who you are, sweet girl. You are Calyptra. It doesn't matter that you were raised apart from us. We are what we are, regardless.
Does that mean you still consider my mom Calyptra? I asked her. Rebecca's eyes shifted past me, as though my mom had just entered the room and interrupted us.
No, she said finally. She gave up her gift. She is lost to us.
My heart tripped over a few beats.
You can give up being Calyptra. How?
My grandmother turned her gaze back to mine, her eyes slightly narrowed, her mouth a flat, humorless line. For an instant she appeared decades older. Or perhaps it was just that her sudden bitterness wiped away her beauty.
Why would you ask such a thing? Did I not just tell you that being Calyptra is a glorious privilege?
I'm sorry. I immediately regretted my question. I was just curious. I mean, I'm way more curious about how we became, you know, the way we are to begin with.
Rebecca schooled the venomous expression from her face, and once again she was the stunning woman I'd first laid eyes on yesterday. Of course you are, dear. Of course you are. There's so much you don't know about us, but we can't cover it all in one day. I wouldn't want to overwhelm you after the hell you've been through. What happened to your mother and sister? How horrible that must have been.
Tears seared the backs of my eyes, and I felt a hot pressure in my head like I was going to sneeze. My throat clamped down around my rising anguish, but it was no use. I had lost my entire family. I had lost them because of something horrible I did. I had brought them back. but that didn't change the reality of how they had died. I broke then, broke wide open, and all the tears I'd held back, all the sobs I had bottled came bursting out. "My poor, sweet girl," Rebecca said, and she came to me and wrapped me in her arms and held me for as long as I needed her to. At some point, her hair loosened and fell from its bun on top of her head, and I felt a nostalgic rush of warmth for this woman I barely knew, as her long blonde hair draped over my arms like a blanket of silk threads. It made me feel like a child again, the child I'd been when my mom's hair was long like Rebecca's, and I had hidden myself in it like I was hiding behind drapes while she sang me to sleep. "Sweet girl, don't cry." I was a child again, and I wanted to be taken care of. I wanted Rebecca to take care of me. Listen carefully. I had anticipated I would get to spend the day with my grandmother, that maybe she would take me on a walking tour of Eclipse, during which we would cull another wildflower or two, or even better, that we might sample from some of the jars in her cupboard. But when I had finished crying and pulled myself together, she rose from the pillows and held out her hand to help me up. "Now, sweet girl, I have work to do, and I imagine you'd like to get yourself cleaned up. Cyrus can show you to the bathhouse and bring you whatever you need." "Oh, okay," I said, failing to hide my disappointment. Rebecca touched my cheek, and as I had last night when she touched me, I felt a pleasant charge on my skin, like a little bit of her anima had transferred to me. I didn't know if that was possible, but that was what it felt like. She leaned forward and kissed me on the forehead. "We'll have plenty of time together. Don't worry about that." I nodded and tried to smile as Rebecca led me to the door and guided me out. "I'll see you at dinner," she said, and started to close the door, then paused with a look that said she'd just remembered something. "Kenna, one thing. You met Joanna." I nodded but didn't elaborate on what Joanna had told my mom, that we should leave and not come back. "I would ask that you steer clear of her for now," Rebecca said. "Joanna and your mom have a complicated history, and I worry that she might take some old grievances out on you." "I'll do my best," I told Rebecca. I didn't mention that I wondered if Rebecca might do the same thing. "Promise me that you will."
"What?"
She stared at me with unblinking, expectant eyes.
"Promise me that you will not talk to Joanna, even if she seems friendly."
I promise," I said faintly.
"Good girl," she said before closing the door, making me feel a bit like a puppy that had just been left at home alone for the first time. As I descended the stairs, I wondered what it was Rebecca was so busy doing alone in her room, while the rest of the Calyptra worked in the fields and gardens, or tended to the livestock, or took care of the house. Maybe she saw her position as more managerial or royal. Regardless, the Calyptra didn't seem to have a problem with the way things were done at Eclipse. They gave the appearance of perfect contentment and satisfaction with their lives. Joanna might be the exception to that, though. There was something different about her. She didn't possess the same blissful tranquility as the others. Or maybe it was just my presence that was disrupting her sense of well-being. I wished I knew more about what had happened between her and my mom, but now that I had promised Rebecca I would avoid her, I couldn't exactly ask her to tell me all of my mom's old buried secrets. So, of course, she would be the first person I ran into when I got lost trying to find my way back to my room.
"There you are," she said when she saw me. "I've been looking for you."
She carried a guitar by its neck. Just looking at the instrument stole my breath. It was small and delicate, made from what I guessed was rosewood, and carved on the back was a design of moon phases and moths. Joanna held the guitar out to me.
"Here," she said. "It belonged to your mom."
"Really?" I accepted the guitar, cradling it against my chest and running my hands over the wood. This guitar was special, an instrument that might have a mind of its own, a voice it had earned from years of play. But I sensed it was a voice that had not been heard in a very long time.
"Rebecca wanted me to get rid of it after your mom left," Joanna said. "But I couldn't do it. Your mom loved that guitar more than, well,
more than a lot of things. I opened my mouth to ask her to tell me more about my mom and how she'd been when she was Calyptra. But then I remembered my promise to Rebecca and closed it again. Thanks, I said simply. Joanna shrugged as if it was no big deal, but I could tell by the intensity in her expression that it was. She would have wanted you to have it. Your mom, not Rebecca. I wondered if Rebecca would be angry if she found out I had it, and even more angry if she found out who had given it to me. I momentarily considered handing it back to Joanna, telling her I couldn't take it. But who was I kidding? My hand felt fused to the guitar. I couldn't give it back now if I wanted to. Joanna read my mind. It would be best if you kept it in your room. Don't bring it to the circle tonight. Don't let Rebecca know you have it. Steak has plenty of others you can choose from. Her dark eyes darted left and right, as though to make sure we were alone. I suggest you play it right away.